Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Live on Air. Nice to have your company today. Do hope you will stay with me until 7 o'clock. I've got a lot coming up for you that I think you will be interested. I hope you will be interested in as well. Now, Peter O'Dwyer is our regular Brexit correspondent and keeps us up to date with what's happening in Ireland in relation to Brexit. Now, Peter's on holidays. He wasn't with us last week and he won't be with us for this week or next week. But hopefully after that, we'll be returning to us after his long vacation and well-deserved, may I add. However, if Brexit and Ireland is a subject that you're interested in, I will be talking to Nick Ashmore from the SBCI, and I will explain to you what that is later on, about funding that's available to SMEs, small to medium-sized enterprises in Ireland, to brace themselves for Brexit and indeed maybe take advantage of some opportunities that may be coming up the hill as well. I will also be talking to a very nice gentleman by the name of Frederico, and Frederico will be telling us all about a festival that's happening on the 15th of September in a little village close to Granada. The name of the festival is Celta Sur. So if Celtic music and dance and things is your bag, well then, join me and we'll find out more about that. And there is a company based in Waterford partnering with a number of companies across Europe, including Spain, by the name of TSSG. And I will tell you what that stands for a little while as well. And they're developing technology at the moment that can be applied on trucks, large trucks, that will prevent trucks being used in terror attacks. We'll find out more about that. That's all happening in Waterford in the southeast of the country. We've got some good music coming up on the programme as well. The contact details for the programme, if you would like to get in touch at any stage, my email address here is ger, G-E-R, at talkradioeurope.com. And as always, I would like to hear from you. Thank you to everybody who put together the programme with me this week. Especially thank you to Jose Antonio Sierra, our cultural link between Spain and Ireland. And yes, you will get to meet Jose Antonio Sierra very soon on the programme, I promise. Now, we said we're going to play some good music, and that's exactly what we're going to do. I mentioned the company TSSG based in Waterford, and it got me to thinking, a man that's connected with Limerick and Waterford is a man by the name of Brendan Boyer, still doing the rounds and still very active, a man in his 80s at this stage. And he fronted the Royal Show Band many years ago, and he put together this beautiful song, and I wanted to play it for you today. It's a song called Lord, You Give Me a Mountain. Brendan Boyer on Live on Era on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Born in the heat of the desert, my mother died, giving me life, deprived of the love of my father. I was blamed for the loss of his wife. Now you know, Lord, I've been in a prison for something I've never done. And it's been one pill after another, but then I climb them all one by one. Sunshine, could, my pride and my joy. She took my reason for living when she took my small baby boy.
Stage many a time, and a joy always to work with him, a pure gentleman. I've known him for years, and he told me the story of recording that particular song, and he told me that he had a very bad flu and chest infection at the time, and he literally recorded it one line at a time. He'd sing a line, he'd have to have some water, he'd go back and sing another line, have some more water, go back and sing another line, and how well it turned out. Brendan Boyer, and You Gave Me a Mountain. Great song it is as well. Right. We'll be talking about Celta Sur. Just a moment. Let's do a very quick break.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney. Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Air.
Now, people love Irish music and they love Celtic music, and Celtic music can cover Scotland and Wales and Ireland and various other places as well. And Spain is great for the Celtic music festivals and Celtic festivals, and there's one happening very close to Granada. It starts on the 15th of September, and it's called Celta Sur. And I'm joined on the phone now by Federico. Federico, muchas gracias for joining me on the programme today, and you're very welcome.
Hello, and thanks for inviting to me and the program.
And thank you for doing this in English. I know it's a struggle, but we'll get through it, I promise you.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the festival, Celta Sur. It's in Granada, but it's near Granada. Tell me where exactly it is.
Yes, it's in a little town close to Granada, Cúllar Vega. I would like to invite all people that enjoy with us. It's a festival that in 2005 start in a little pub, Irish pub, and this festival grow up bit a bit, and yeah. In 2010
right.
stop because the money isn't enough. Again in this year we can organize again, and we are very happy for this, and I think in Granada is a city when people accept this type of music, this Irish music or Scottish music or absolutely Celtic music.
Can you tell me about some of the people that will be taking part in the festival?
Yes, the people is musicians. For example, all the festival, there are many musicians, a lot of musicians. And for example, in 2010, there were about 100 musicians.
Okay.
About, yes. And in this festival, actually, it's another format, because there are musicians in a meeting of musicians with Irish Celtas, Irish Celtic airs.
Okay.
And another part is different, because it's like a festival. There are many type of music. For example, there are a concert that because there are a group called Supervivientes, so survivors in English.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a group from Granada, but the different musicians are from different parts of the world, because there are one of them, for example, is from Cuba, or another is from Asturias in the north of Spain. I don't remember is Morten, Norwegian or Nordic countries, I think. And another activities is with a banda de gaitas, pipes band, Mafi Candú, is from Murcia, close to Andalusia. And there are two Irish treble dancers. It's a group for the different dance from Ireland. It's more or less all the festival.
So you have Irish dancers, and where in Ireland are they coming from, do you know?
Yes, Irish treble dancer in Madrid. I think all the dancers is from Madrid.
Okay.
They dance around the Spain and another sites.
Okay. And are you expecting many people to arrive in the town?
Oh, I hope many people, because organize this festival is hard, but I love organize,
right.
Yeah, organize it, and I hope all organization this for enjoy people, and I would like to be all people that want enjoy the music, the Celtic music. Visit to us to enjoy with us.
All right. And can you tell me the website address if people want to take a look at it?
www.celtasur.airesceltas.com. In this website you can find all the information. We try to put different contents.
Excellent.
Permanently update.
Okay. And you start at 8 p.m., is that correct?
At 8 p.m., the performance will begin on stage and will finish at 12:30 a.m., more or less. But the musicians normally won't play more time,
yes.
Normally.
Okay, and that's on the 15th of September.
Yes, in September, and I think it's important to remember that it's a free concert. All the musicians play without honoraries. In the future, will grow up to a great festival.
Lovely.
But I think a bit is better.
You were very kind to take the interview on the telephone in English. So, especially for you, I'm going to try this in Spanish. So I'll say, gracias por hablar conmigo esta tarde y te deseo lo mejor con Celta Sur.
Many thanks, and it's difficult for me, and I try to speak, and I hope that people understand all the things. But if they don't understand, visit the website.
Yes, indeed. It's there.
Better.
Frederico, thank you very much, and I do wish you well with the festival.
Thank you. Thank
adios.
You,
Ana. Gracias.
I hope to see you again.
Look forward to it, and next year my Spanish will be better, I promise.
Come over the hills, my bonny Irish lass. Come over the hills to your darling. You choose the road, love, and I'll make a vow that I'll be your true love forever. And red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. Fair is the lily of the valley. Clear is the water that flows from but my love is fairer than any. 'Twas down by Killarney's green woods
that we strayed. When the moon and the stars, they were shining. The moon shone its rays on her locks of golden hair, and she swore she'd be my love forever. And red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. Fair is the lily of the valley. Clear is the water that flows from Boyne. But my love is fairer than any. 'Tis not for the parting with my sister Kate. It's not for the grief of my mom. It's all for the loss of my bonny Irish lass, that my heart is breaking forever. And red is the rose that in yonder garden grows. Of the valley, clear is the water that flows from the Boyne, but my love is fairer than
any. They do a fabulous version of that, don't they? The Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makeham. And one of the Clancy Brothers will feature very shortly when we look at some things that happened down through the years in history. That's a great song, Red is the Rose. All right, let us look at some of the events that happened down through the years, and we mark the celebration, or we celebrate the anniversary of them on this week. Today, for instance, the 3rd of September. Back in 1850, charters were granted to colleges in Belfast, now Queen's University, in Cork, it's now UCC, and Galway, now UCG or NUIG, under the Universities Ireland Act. In 1972, on this day, Mary Peters won the women's pentathlon in Munich and became the first Irish woman to win an Olympic gold medal. 1998, on this day, near the scene of the explosion, US President Bill Clinton and British Premier Tony Blair unveiled a plaque in memory of those who lost their lives and who were injured in the Omagh bombing. Tomorrow is the 4th of September, 1976. On that day, women protested against men-only bathing at the 40-foot in Sandy Cove. If you're from the Dublin area or know about it, you'll be familiar with what the 40-foot in Sandy Cove is. On Wednesday, it's the 5th of September, 1771, on that day, Benjamin Franklin's visit to Ireland began. I didn't know, or if I did, I'd forgotten, that Benjamin Franklin actually visited Ireland. It was on the 5th of September in 1930 that the first edition of the Irish Press, a Dublin daily newspaper, later to become an Irish daily newspaper, was founded by De Valera as a platform for Fianna Fáil, was published. 1930. 1998, President Bill Clinton follows in the footsteps of John F. Kennedy and became a free man of Limerick on the last day of his 3-day visit to Ireland. Thursday is the 6th of September, and it marks the anniversary from 1974, where 19 prisoners escaped from Portlaoise prison, a rather daring escape if I can remember. 1981 on that day, the death of Christy Brown, a disabled Dublin author who learned to type with his left foot. And you will remember the movie My Left Foot. Well, it was all about Christy Brown. 1987 on the 6th of September, cyclist Stephen Roach won the World Professional Road Race Championship. And in 2002, the death was announced of Bobby Clancy, one of the Clancy brothers that you've just heard on the programme. It was also the day, 1971, that the late Dolores O'Riordan was born in Limerick, and we'll be taking a track from the Cranberries very shortly. Friday the 7th of December, 1948, Taoiseach John A. Costello declared the Irish Free State a republic, and Bridie Gallagher, wonderful singer from Donegal, was born in 1924. The 8th of September is Saturday. In 2002, the Kilkenny Cats beat the County Clare Banners and collected their 27th All-Ireland hurling title in front of 76,254 fans at Croke Park, and I was one of those. Indeed I was. Sunday is the 9th of September, 872. That's the year we're talking about. The earliest verifiable date of a Viking invasion of Ireland in Dunralley. And finally, it was 1845 on that date that the arrival of the potato blight in Ireland was reported in the Dublin Evening Post. So there we go. Just some of the events that happened on this week in history down through the years. I did say we take music from Dolores O'Riordan and the Cranberries, and that's exactly what we're going to do right now. Here's a lovely song. It's called Linger on Live on Era, the Irish programme on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.
Every day.
The beautiful voice of the late Dolores O'Riordan, whose birthday we will be celebrating and marking on Thursday of this week, the 6th of September. She was born in 1971. She would have been 47. How young it was that we lost her. Right, we're going to be talking about Brexit and funding available to companies in Ireland as a result of that, just after this quick break.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Era.
The uncertainty triggered by Brexit is a significant concern for many of the SMEs in Ireland, and while the final outcome of the process remains unclear, it is likely that in responding to the challenge, many firms will require extra resources, but that in the form of people, capital, equipment, materials, or access to increased finance. Enterprise Ireland has been working with the Department of Business, Enterprise and Innovation on the introduction of a €300 million Brexit loan scheme to help eligible Irish companies secure the resources that they need. Now, the scheme is being operated by the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland, the SBCI, and that organisation will provide SMEs with the support required to implement changes as they prepare for Brexit, enhancing overall business resilience, whatever developments may occur. Now, the Chief Executive of the SBCI is on the line, Nick Ashmore. Good evening and thank you very much for talking to us today.
Hi, good evening, John.
Nick, this has been running for the last number of months, if I'm not mistaken. How has it been going?
That's correct, Joe. It's been up and running since March. It's a €300 million loan scheme that we're deploying through the three frontline banks in Ireland, which is Ulster Bank, AIB and Bank of Ireland. And it offers SMEs loans between €25,000 and up to €1.5 million at less than 4%. Or at 4%. And it also has lower security requirements, so it's an easier to access loan.
Okay.
And it's particularly targeted at SMEs that are impacted by Brexit and are innovating in the face of Brexit. So it's easy to access low-cost finance to help them work through the issues that Brexit's starting to present. It's also very flexible because, as you know, Brexit's a very uncertain picture at the moment. We don't know exactly what it's going to be doing. We've only been in the market 3 months and we're starting to see the applications come through. I suppose around about the beginning of July, we had about 150 applicants. Almost all of those have been approved at the SBCI level. Applicants come to the SBCI first to confirm eligibility, and then they take the approval to the bank, which means they're walking into the bank with a guarantee in hand rather than the normal way of having to walk in and provide security or provide ever more information. So they still have to go through the normal bank underwriting process, but we're taking a substantial amount of the risk away from the banks.
Okay. So will you tell me then what the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland is?
Yes. We're the long descendant of what used to be ICC Bank, and that we're a national promotional financial institution. We're here to provide either liquidity, which is long-term sources of money to lenders, or we share some of the risk on the underlying loans, either through supporting the credit guarantee scheme, which has been around for quite a while, since 2011, but also through our own schemes. We had a very successful agricultural scheme in 2017, which saw €150 million lent to farmers in a very short period of time at a low rate. The Brexit loan scheme is the next version of that way of working. And it's where the government can take a relatively lower amount of money, use it to buy a risk share through the SBCI and through European support, and leverage a much larger pool of lending at an attractive rate to SMEs. So rather than giving out, say, €23 million in grants, it can actually support €300 million in lending. It's a very efficient way of deploying funds.
And the criteria that is necessary then to get some of this funding, what do companies have to do? What's the criteria?
Well, we're looking for companies that have at least 15% impact of Brexit. So if you have 15% of your sales end up in the UK, it doesn't have to be directly, it can be indirectly, or 15% of your costs come from the UK directly or indirectly, you qualify. And then you have to be innovating to do something about it. So whether that's new product lines, new packaging, new investment in equipment, new sales markets, all of those things. We're not looking for specifics. We're looking for a business plan that shows how they're innovating. But ultimately, these are working capital loans, so we don't need to tie them to a particular transaction or a particular piece of machinery, for instance.
Okay. And when a company wants to apply, how does the company do that?
The company comes to the SBCI website, which is sbci.gov.ie. There's an application form on the website. There's also a telephone number there. They can call our customer service people and they can talk them through the application. You can fill it in online, print it out, sign it and email it in, or you can just print it off, fill it in manually and send it in as well. So it's straightforward, doesn't take a huge amount of time. And if you've got any questions, our guys are there on the phone ready to talk you through.
I see on the information that I received that the fund can be used to support new working capital requirements with the development of business plans. And it also says, with Brexit preparations also presenting opportunities for Irish business. What kind of opportunities are being presented by Brexit?
It's interesting. I mean, I think the Department of Finance does a credit demand survey every 6 months, and they just released some of the headlines of the latest one up till March. So that shows that 57% of SMEs believe that Brexit will have a negative effect on their business, but 11% believe that it'll have a positive impact. So that may be that they're competing with UK companies selling into Europe, or they see opportunities where UK companies are coming into Ireland and they can compete with them more effectively post-Brexit. It really varies enormously depending on the sector and the industry, but I think it's more likely to be in the service industries where there's less of an impact of tariffs, and if there are difficulties for UK companies to operate, it may open up opportunities or lower competition for Irish businesses.
And does Brexit have to go in a particular direction for all of this to work? You know, plans are being made at the moment and nobody knows what way Brexit is going to be, whether it'll be a soft one, whether it'll be a hard one, the border issue, you know. So what happens if things don't go according to plan?
Well, I think it's very hard to know what the plan is for Brexit because it's so unknowable at the moment and very hard to underwrite. I think what I would say is there are certain things that are known unknowns that businesses will have. So what is the impact of tariffs potentially on their business? That's a very easily researched and understood factor. So there are websites, but also InterTrade Ireland, which is a north-south body that advises small businesses on trade, has a €2,000 grant available, which will source advice. Someone will come in and do all that work for you for €2,000. They'll work out what the Brexit tariffs impact could be, if there's a hard Brexit, what soft Brexit might look like. Mm-hmm. And so you can get some solid, really, you know, reliable advice there. Same with Enterprise Ireland. They've got a number of grant schemes and their Brexit impact kind of test as well. So it's well worth talking to advisors, talking to other sources of government support, like Enterprise Ireland, like the local enterprise offices, and like InterTrade, to see what steps you can be doing that may or may not ultimately be required. But actually, in many cases, the steps are things that are worth doing anyway. So, you know, there's no real downside, apart from a bit of investment, to go and look at selling into new markets. And ultimately, if the UK carries on and you have a new market to sell, that's incremental value for your business. Equally, if the UK does go sideways, then you already started to mitigate that impact. Now, this isn't going to work for everyone, to be realistic. Some of the food companies are highly UK orientated due to the tastes of the UK market as opposed to the European market. So, you know, it's not a panacea, but also for many businesses, it is a positive step that's worth taking either way.
Can the company come back for a top-up if they need to?
If it's within the overall limit of €1.5 million, yes, they can.
They can. And how long will the scheme run for, Nick?
It's running from March this year for 2 years.
Okay. Now, just in the unlikely event that there is no Brexit, does it make any difference?
That's a very, very good question. I'm not aware of a scenario yet that actually allows for that eventuality. I think Article 50 has been triggered. I think the UK government would have to withdraw the letter it sent triggering Article 50. And I think that would require a change in government, possibly a further referendum. And time is really very short for that. So I think, you know, it's a nice idea. I think we'd all be much happier if that was the case. But, you know, I don't think necessarily Europe would allow the UK to continue on exactly the same terms anyway. So, I do think this is coming down the line. It's one of those things, whether you're looking at the light at the end of the tunnel or the train coming the other direction. I think it's more elements of the latter, and I think it's better to be prepared than not be prepared in this instance.
And finally, Nick, I know you're under pressure time-wise, but how prepared is business in Ireland for what may be coming with Brexit?
I think there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that people are waiting to see what it's going to look like before they do a lot, but from what our understanding is, less than 10% of businesses would actually have actively written plans for what to do when Brexit arrives.
And just finally, assuming everything goes to plan on the 29th of March next year and the UK says bye-bye, are you expecting an onslaught of applications?
Well, we'll be ready if they come.
Good. Nick, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That is the Chief Executive, Nick Ashmore, from the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland, the SBCI. And the website address again, Nick?
It's the sbci.gov.ie.
Excellent. Thank you for talking to us, and we wish you the best of your business. Bye-bye now.
Presenting live on air.
Let's look back at the Eurovision Song Contest and take a Eurovision memory. Ah, it is nice to do it now and again, isn't it? The Eurovision Song Contest of 1974, we're up to, was the 19th edition of the annual Eurovision Song Contest. It was held on the 6th of April, and it was held in the seaside resort of Brighton on the south coast of the United Kingdom. But, sure, you told us that 1973 winners were Luxembourg. That's right. So why was Britain? Will you give me a chance to explain? The BBC agreed to stage the event after Luxembourg, having won in both 1972 and 1973, declined on the grounds of expense to host the contest for a second consecutive year. The winner of the contest that year was Sweden with the song Waterloo, which was performed by ABBA, absolutely. And a lady by the name of Katie Boyle returned to host her fourth Eurovision Song Contest. Now, in relation to Ireland, a lady by the name of Tina Reynolds, or simply Tina, as she was known professionally, represented Ireland in the 1974 Eurovision Song Contest. Her song, Cross Your Heart, came seventh, but was a number one hit in the Irish charts. Of course it was. Prior to this, Tina had a number of chart hits in Ireland, so she was no stranger to success. She almost represented Ireland at the Eurovision Song Contest the previous year, as she was flown out to Luxembourg to replace singer Maxi, who had refused to perform. I didn't know this until I was researching the 1974 one. But anyway, ultimately, Maxi was persuaded to perform on the night, so Tina didn't get her chance, but she did in 1974 with the song called Cross Your Heart. Let's take a listen to it from 1974, the lovely Tina Reynolds. Tina Reynolds, or Tina as she was known, the 1974 entry for Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest. Great song called Cross Your Heart. I remember her performing it, actually. Going to take a very quick break. Coming back after that, we will tell you about a company based in Waterford that is helping to ensure that big trucks are no longer used as weapons in terror attacks.
Ger Sweeney presenting Live on Air. Gersweeney presenting Live on Era.
Irish tech experts have teamed up with their European counterparts to develop a new and secure truck navigation system to prevent large vehicles from being used in a terror attack. Now, the TransSec project includes leaders in the fields of telecoms and other wireless high-speed communications protocols at the Telecommunications Software and Systems Group, otherwise known as the TSSG, and they are based at Waterford Institute of Technology on the east coast of Ireland. Now, TransSec addresses a new danger in European countries, the increasing number of terror attacks. And joining me on the line right now from Waterford is a man by the name of Martin Tolan. And Martin is from the TSSG. Martin, good evening and thank you very much for taking time to talk to us today.
No problem. Good to speak to you. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Martin, this is great work, isn't it, for an Irish company to be involved in something that will have global benefits?
It is. And one of the interesting aspects to it is that most of the work that's carried out in the ICT sector usually doesn't make it into the mainstream media and into the public eye because it's usually abstracted away and it's kind of like always at a high level, whereas this is a topic that hits everybody. We're talking about citizen safety in public spaces. So it actually has an effect on everybody. Everybody has seen the results of terror attacks. And anybody who goes on holidays now on vacation to touristy areas, they know that these risks are real and could happen to them at any time. So it's actually, for us, it's quite an honour for us to be able to, you know, have an impact, have a positive impact on this type of input into citizen safety, not only in Europe, but across the world.
Across the world.
Yeah, so it's quite exciting, yeah.
Okay. Telecommunications Software and Systems Group, TSSG. Tell me a little bit about the company, please.
We're a research arm of WIT. And we're wholly funded based on research, not only from national bodies, but also European bodies. We carry out research into such areas as data center technology, communications, and more recently, 5G communications, and also different vertical sectors, such as medical, as well as this project, which is covering smart mobility and autonomous driving type vehicles.
Now, when I'm watching the news and I see a horrible event like we have seen in places across the world where big trucks have been used to mow people down and kill them, you think, oh, jeepers, that's terrible and that's a pity. I'm sure, what can you do to stop it? However, people like yourself look at something like that and think, well, there's a way maybe you could use technology to maybe prevent this. And how does a group get together? Because I know you're working with European partners on this. So how do you get together as one to discuss this one topic? Is there like a forum that you share thoughts on, or how does it work?
The European Commission, they host several information days based around different areas and different thematic areas of research that they're interested in. And the European Commission itself, if you can remember back, announced a budget of over 80 billion for the Horizon 2020 funding framework a couple of years ago. And that's where all these projects are coming out of. So this is just one area of research that the Commission has decided to follow. So the particular area itself came out of discussions that we had as a consortium where the partners got together at one of these information days.
Right.
And we were discussing, so the problem that the Commission gave to us was the European version of global satellite navigation systems is called Galileo. And it's quite unique in that it's the only civilian-managed global positioning system in the world. So they provided funding for ideas. Say, we want you to come up with unique and innovative ideas that's going to make use of the Galileo positioning system. So we got together at one of these information days. We formed a consortium and we threw around a couple of ideas. What was in the media at the time was all of these incidents where trucks were being weaponized and used to drive into people and cause maximum, try and inflict maximum damage.
Yeah.
Coupled with what the Commission were looking for, we came up with TransSec. That's essentially how it comes about.
When I was talking to you earlier, you told me that there's a Spanish partner in all of this.
Yes, one of our Spanish partners. They're based in San Sebastian. Uh-huh. They're Vicom Tech, and they're a research institute out of the Basque area. We have done previous European projects with Vicom Tech, so we have a very well-established relationship with those, with that organisation. And this is part of how the European Commission enables partners to get together. It's not only for information days that they provide every so often, but it's also, there's a lot of networking between all the different organisations that collaborate in research across Europe.
Okay.
And it just so happens that Vicom Tech we have carried out several previous projects with that organisation in the past. Maybe one of them successful, so we have a very strong relationship with them, and it's quite exciting to actually start a new project with those guys again.
Oh, lovely. We've got the background to it. We know who's involved. So tell me what Transec involves.
Okay. So you have a truck that's driving down a road in a city, and it's driving down a city, down Main Street, and just off those main streets could be pedestrian boulevards, there could be plazas that are mainly pedestrianised, there might be marketplaces. And what can happen is the truck can veer off, causing damage.
Right.
What we're doing is we're using the Galileo satellite system in order to give us sub-meter accuracy. So we've got highly accurate positioning in real time of the truck. So we know where the truck is. We sprinkle that on top of highly accurate maps, so we know exactly where we should be. We're also using all the sensor technology that's available today in autonomous driving vehicles. So we're talking about LiDAR, we're talking about ultrasonics, infrared, all these various inputs that you have. And they're used to detect the non-static objects. So we're talking about people, cars, okay, bicycles. Right. First of all, we're pinpointing our position. Second, we overlay that on top of the map so we know where in the vicinity we are. Mm-hmm. Then we populate the rest of the map with the dynamic objects, which are people and cars and stuff like that. So we build up a complete horizon of what we are and what's around us. So we can identify that, oh, there's a threat in front of us, there's a threat beside us. So what we do is we also monitor the state of the vehicle, how it's being driven. Is it being driven erratically? Is it exceeding the speed limit for the area that we're in? Is there erratic steering and erratic braking and accelerating? All of that feeds into our analysis, along with the horizon that we've generated. And the output of that is the probability of a crash occurring.
Uh-huh.
So we get a yes or no at the end of this. So what we do then is if we think there's a high probability of a crash occurring, so it's called our pre-crash detection, we carry out several countermeasures at that stage. First of all, we broadcast out to all the vehicles and infrastructure in the surrounding area. So that can be over short-range communications all over 5G once it's released.
Oh, no,
and what we're doing is we're communicating to the vehicles around us to avoid us. We're communicating to roadside units so that they can control the, say, the smart city infrastructure. So we're talking about traffic lights and pedestrian lights and stuff like that. So that actually the traffic lights can kick in and divert traffic away from the danger area. We can also inform in pedestrian areas to be digital signage that gives, you know, weather at the minute, maybe advertisements and stuff like that.
Mm.
But we can actually push danger messages to those, to that set of digital signage that can inform pedestrians there's an imminent attack and you need to evacuate. But it also gives the directions to evacuate too, because you don't want people running into the path of the danger vehicle.
Okay.
So all of this is what's carried on outside of the vehicle if we detect that the crash is imminent. Inside the vehicle, what we do then is we take control of the vehicle. So what we can do is we take evasive manoeuvres, and what we do is we would try and steer the vehicle away from the target area, if you will, away from danger. We can cut fuel to the fuel pump. We can apply braking. So all in all, we're attempting to stop the vehicle and steer it away from the danger area as soon as possible. And the reason for that is informing the authorities and everybody around us what's happening, that is an imminent attack, but we also need to intervene to try and disable the vehicle as soon as possible in order to reduce casualties.
And is all of this done? I'm sure there are not people sitting watching this. This is all being watched by another computer or by computers. And is there some mechanism then whereby when the computer recognises that this is what's happening, it involves a human being, or does it just all happen by computer?
It's all the decisions is made on board on the vehicle itself.
Wow.
We're not incurring any delays by transmitting all the information up to a cloud service and then they're coming back or getting the human to review it and go make the final decision. No, this is all on board in the truck itself.
But for this to work, doesn't every large truck have to have this system on board?
In the future, what will happen is this may become the de facto standard in trucks.
Right.
One of the features that we're supporting as part of Transec is the European-wide eCall system. So in April 2018, eCall became standard in all new vehicles sold within the European Union. So what we're doing is we're piggybacking on the eCall system. So if you're familiar with eCall, if you're in an accident, the car will automatically call the emergency services
with the location.
And give position, the location of your vehicle, the type of crash that it was, the identifier for the vehicle, so whether it was a bus or a car, that type of stuff, and some telemetry information about the nature of the crash. So is it just a fender bender or was it a major crash? Now, what we're doing is we're piggybacking on that. When we detect a high probability of an attack, we're going to be broadcasting that over eCall. So the emergency services are aware before anything can happen so they can react instantly. To answer your question, eCall was only a feature that was incorporated in some vehicles, but in April of this year, it became standard. One of our partners is Daimler AG from Stuttgart in Germany, and as you know, they're the parent company for Mercedes-Benz, who manufacture not only cars, but trucks. So what we're hoping to do is that once the project finishes in 3 years' time, that Transtech will become an integrated component in their trucks. And over time, this may become standard within the EU, and that the EU may specify that this is a new regulation for all trucks to operate within the European Union must have Transtech or form a Transtech installed. So yes, in the short term, it works better. It'll only work on trucks that have it retrofitted or as part of manufacture. But in the long term, we would hope that everybody will have this. There's a lot of vehicles on the road today that do communicate with each other that we don't know about. But they're using standard protocols and interfaces, and we're using those to communicate out anyway. So there's a lot of stuff there already that we don't know about.
Hard to imagine two cars passing on the freeway and they say, well, John, how things? Grant, how are you?
That's it. And what the kind of information that they're passing is all clear ahead. So is there a traffic problem ahead? Is there a crash? Is there any restrictions? That type of stuff.
Did you tell me this is going to take 3 years?
Yeah, so we started the project in February 2018. It's due to finish the end of January 2021. At that point, because it's a European-funded project, we present our findings to the Commission, so we have a final project review with the Commission. That not only encompasses the set of deliverables to define the research that was carried out within the project, but also we have trucks at our disposal, courtesy of Daimler, our partner, and we're retrofitting those trucks with our technology, and we're going to be driving those around the streets of Stuttgart or wherever the Commission would like us to hold the final review. Mm-hmm. We're going to be driving those trucks in populated areas to demonstrate what Transtech can do. Yep.
It's fascinating stuff. And in fairness, when I was looking at this initially, I thought, well, if you put something in place to stop the terrorists using the large trucks, they'll just use something else. But this is not a waste of time or money, because it's something that can be built into probably all vehicles at some point to help road safety as we move forward.
Absolutely. Wow. So a lot of the innovation in vehicle safety today is to aid the driver.
Yeah.
So we're talking about lane detection, lane adherence, automatic braking systems, that type of stuff. Whereas what we're talking about is the deliberate and intentional misuse of the vehicle.
Yeah.
So it's a different type of angle we're taking. And that's what we're trying to address, is that shortcoming in the innovation that's available today. Now, the other point around that is there's no reason why this couldn't transfer to other vehicles, is correct. But also, if you take the use case, now we're not considering this directly within the project, but if you take the use case where a driver might have a heart attack or might have some debilitation while they're at the wheel, there's no reason why Transtech can't take over and bring the vehicle to a safe stop.
All right. Well, it's fascinating to think that this is all being led by a company in Waterford, in the southeast of Ireland. And how many of you are working on this one?
Across the entire consortium, there's five partners. And in Ireland, we're the only partner. And there's six of us full-time working on it.
Okay.
And then as different deliverables are due throughout the lifetime of the project, we can scale up and scale down appropriately.
It reminds me of a story I heard years ago when the Airbus came into force and it was in competition with the jumbo jets from Boeing, and everything was so computerized and technology led, and it was fascinating. And there was a statement made one time that in the future there would only be a captain and a dog in the cockpit, and that's all you'd need. And the question obviously was, what's the dog for? And the dog was there to bite the pilot if he touched anything. And it's kind of like that, isn't it? Listen, Martin,
we're getting to that point. Yes,
I'm not at all a techie. I love techie gadgets and all sorts of things, but I don't understand technology as well as you understand it. But the way you've explained that to me is fascinating and really understandable. It's a fascinating project. I wish you well as you go forward over the 3 years and bring it to a great conclusion. And I look forward to seeing it being rolled out over the next number of years.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. That's Martin Tolan, and Martin joins us from TSSG, which is Telecommunications Software and Systems Group, based in Waterford in Ireland. Thanks, Martin.
No problem.
And that brings to a close another Live On Era. I hope that you have enjoyed the programme as much as I have enjoyed presenting it to you. I look forward to your company again next Monday, and don't forget the contact details for the programme if you would like to email at any stage is GER at talkradioeurope.com. Don't forget, you can listen back as well. We've got a listen back facility on the website, talkradioeurope.com. Just go to the 7-day playback. Go to Monday, go to 18 to 1900 hours. In fact, it'll be live there in about maybe 20 minutes time from now. Give it a chance to load up. But just in case you wanted to hear something back again, or tell a friend about it. Thank you to Jose Antonio Sierra, our cultural link between Spain and Ireland. He disseminates the programme to various people around the world on a weekly basis as well. And we will be meeting Jose Antonio shortly, I promise you. Thank you as well to everybody who took part in the programme, and to my colleagues here on TRE as well for their continued support and promotion of the programme throughout the weeks. Look after yourselves and each other, and I'll see you next Monday, hopefully. From me, Ger Sweeney. Until then, bye-bye now.